Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2017. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melita Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You listen to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melita Dennett. This is Radio Reverb's Brighton Festival special.
And I'm Rebecca Sandals. And we're here during the festival 5 to 6pm, repeated at 10pm and 8am. And we're looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, the creators and the people who make it happen.
And today we're going to be finding out about an unusual tribute to Judy Garland. Looking forward to a dance performance that puts the audience on the stage. And dropping into a pop-up photography darkroom, taking us back to the pre-digital days. That's all in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, very kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Starting off the show now, as we always do, with top tunes out of Brighton. This is DJ Cutler Viz and Hit Me One Time.
Hit me one time as I will tell it to you.
You know what? It sounds like summer, doesn't it? That's Brighton's DJ Cutler Viz and Hit Me One Time. You're listening to the Brighton Festival special on Radio Reverb with Melita Dennett and Rebecca Sandals. 97.2 FM in Brighton and Hove, online at radioreverb.com on DAB. And you'll also find us further afield in Sussex and Surrey on DAB via Upload Radio.
Now, Glasgow-based performance artist FK Alexander is bringing an unusual show to the Spire this weekend. With a live accompaniment, she's going to be singing Judy Garland's final performance of her signature song, Over the Rainbow, last recorded just months before Garland's death in 1969. Brighton Festival's Rob Jones came to Radio Reverb to talk to Melita about the performance. But first, let's hear from Judy herself in that final public performance.
I must sit down, really, with these feathers and high heels. Well, it will look splendid. Shall we hit the song? And this is to you, because I'm dedicated to you. Thank you for coming. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
FK Alexander is an incredible performance artist from Glasgow, and she has this amazing piece called I Could Go On Singing, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's based on Judy Garland's final performance at Carnegie Hall. And basically, it's kind of part sound installation, part one-on-one performance. You get given a ticket. You go in to, it's going to be at the Spire. You go into the Spire, big church, and there's a big group of, you can be in there, the audience. You stand on an X, and then the performance begins. FK Alexander, absolutely incredible performer.
Just for you.
Just for you.
That sounds terrifying.
No. It's incredible. Trust me. I sat and watched this in Edinburgh for an hour, and people were crying, breaking down. And she's like a performance wizard. Like, that's the only way I can really describe it. But basically, I don't want to give too much away, but basically a one-on-one performance happens where she performs, and also there's playing over the airwaves, and there's a huge kind of soundscape happening at the same time. It's kind of like a big wall of sound. It's beautiful, really engulfing and sensory. And she holds your hand and performs this one-on-one performance of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's a very orchestrated, clear, controlled performance, and it happens again and again. But the whole time you as an audience member are there, she is completely focused on you, holding your hand, looking into your eyes. No, trust me. And you're completely safe. It's undivided attention, and you forget everything else. Something about that song, when you really think about the words of that song, when you really think about also Judy Garland, her life, what she'd been through, and the context of it, and the atmosphere that it creates, something about it happening over and over again. And I've pitched this to like my festival team and everyone over and over. It really is something you have to experience, but it is an incredible experience to have. So she's going to be doing that for 3 days at the end of the festival at the Spire. It's a durational performance, which means it will go on for a long period of time, but audience members can come and go. They don't have to be there for the whole period of time it's on.
If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why can I?
Yeah. Brighton Festival's Rob Jones talking about I Could Go On Seeing You Over the Rainbow by FK Alexander. And that's taking place at the Spire Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a four-hour performance between 6 and 10pm, where, as Rob said, that you can just come and go as you please. I love Judy Garland.
Well, and I was fascinated hearing about that, because you can come and go as you please, but you buy a ticket, so yeah. it isn't just sort of rock up. Because when he was talking about the fact that the performance there, there's an intensity, and the one-to-one thing sounds, wow, yeah. Very intense, if you are that person in the audience. But he talked about a soundscape and a wall of sound, and which suddenly made me think of Lou Reed's Drones in the same venue last year, which was a wall of sound soundscape.
That was absolutely amazing, wasn't it? And I went along to interview the guy who'd set up that, and I was actually there as he was starting it off, and gradually the sound built up, and to hear the way that sound built around in that space, a great big echoey church space as well. So yeah, I think you're right about the wall of sound.
It's fascinating. There's an absolute difference though. The same space, the same church space, where last year there was a load of amplifiers and electric guitars set up doing basic feedback that filled the space. And this year, it's the fragile voice of Judy Garland that will be doing, or someone channeling Judy, that will be achieving an equally, I imagine, from the sound of that description, emotional kind of response from the audience. I'm fascinated.
I like the idea as well of coming and going over a four-hour period. So I guess you could go in and you could have your one-to-one, go out and have a cup of tea and then come back again.
Yeah, I kind of think I don't necessarily want 4 hours of an intensive experience with Judy.
No.
But dipping in and out sounds amazing. Intriguing.
Terrific. So as with all of these, you can generally find some festival standbys. If you have a look on the Brighton Festival website, brightonfestival.org, and some of them say returns only, but there's quite often festival standbys as well. If you don't want to take a chance, well, you could take a chance on leaving it till the moment comes. I have a feeling this one's going to sell out, actually.
I think there is availability. But yeah, again, it's check. And sometimes, because I noticed the Bug one on Tuesday had been sold out for a long time, yet on the ferry day there are around 16 seats around the dome. I'm a nerd. I go and sort of check the diagram where the seats are. But so it is always worth on the day. If you thought, oh, there were never any tickets, it all sold out, just it's worth checking.
Try it. Yeah. A £10 standby can't be bad. So the Brighton Festival website, as ever, is brightonfestival.org. And Australian hip-hop performer MC Remy is joining Kate Tempest at the Dome on Friday evening for Tempest's final appearance of many at the Brighton Festival. Remy's album's Divas and Demons came out last year, and this track is called Lose Sleep.
Yes, yes, to get shaken.
Very cool stuff. That's MC Remy performing with Kate Tempest at the Dome this Friday evening, which I think is going to be sold out.
I believe so. And it is amazing that she has managed to come along and be filling venues across Brighton over the month. I mean, I'm not surprised because of her talent, but just the spoken word and the attraction that it is at this festival is stunning. And yeah, she's a big part of that, isn't she?
She's really made her mark on it, I think, this year. And yeah, she's done at least 4 performances, I think, in Brighton. And you know, she's been out in Hangleton, hasn't she, as well?
Yeah, and also she has been performing elsewhere in the country. So I would actually suggest to people that if you do spot Kate Tempest roaming around town on Friday, or in fact sitting on a bench having a nap, don't wake her up and ask for a selfie, because I imagine she actually probably needs some sleep. So just let her have a little doze.
The Brighton Festival 2017. Every day epic.
Now, it's a warm, sunny day here in Brighton. I mean, I think many of us might fall asleep on a bench. It's such lovely weather. But I chose to go and visit a darkroom, a community darkroom, before you say anything, Melita, for photography. The Bright Room is a pop-up festival event seeking to reconnect us with traditional photographic processes.
Hello, my name's Eddie Ochier. I'm a photographer, occasional wedding DJ, curator and learning specialist.
So Eddie, I have to say, in quite a few years of doing radio interviews, I don't think I've ever interviewed anyone in a red light dark room before. So tell me, what have we got going on here?
Oh, well, basically, for part of the Brighton Festival, we decided we're going to build a community darkroom and gallery. The idea being that people are going to be invited to come in, take cameras, get film, shoot Brighton.
Film?
Yes, celluloid film. We do believe film's alive and well and serves a great purpose in terms of being to allow people to record their memories of things that matter to them in such a way that they don't sort of disappear in the cloud, as it were.
Well, and also they probably have to think about what they're taking, because my memory is 24 or 36 if you've treated yourself.
Basically.
Images, and that's your lot.
Basically, every participant has 36 exposures to play with. Out of that, they've got a few, you know, all the time they need to sort of take in what they can. But within that 36, you can tell a story. Because every picture that I expect them to put together is as a series, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to 36, they have a contact sheet. Those contact sheets are a generic narrative of what they experienced within that time they were taking those pictures. And then hopefully take one picture out of that and stick it on our gallery wall and make that a part of our end of Brighton Festival celebration.
So, and these are black and white photos, are they?
All black and white photographs, all taken on a random series of cameras, some ranging from cult classics from the 70s to really weird 90s Japanese cameras made for golfers.
Now, I have to admit a nerdy interest here, because as a young person, I had a darkroom in the bathroom at home, and I was active in the School Photographic Society, and my black and white done photos, so I'm really excited at the smell of chemicals down here. But is it a process that other people are a little bit astounded by, because it's not, you know, it's not the norm now at all.
It's so not the norm, and I think people that struggle mainly not with the chemistry but with the darkness, the red light, and they describe it as a womb when they walk in here, and I'm like, okay,
that's positive though, isn't it?
It really is, and I think it is a birthplace or birth in space for not so much ideas but things that happen. You know, the kind of photography I expect people to take pictures of isn't constructed. It's an unimagined landscape that already exists out there. It's the landscape of Brighton.
So grab what you see. Go and take a real photo of what's really happening.
Absolutely. Grab what you see and grab what's really important. And yesterday when we had our first set of participants, the one participant that really struck me was a young 8-year-old girl who came with her mother and her father. And she took the weird Japanese camera because it just looked weird and felt good in her hand. And it gave her 72 shots. And I remember her being down here counting every single shot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. With absolute pride that she had captured 72 moments of her day. And it made her giggle. She would see something like, you know, "Mummy, I love you," because she took a picture of some random card she saw in a window. Anything. But it made her giggle.
Do you know, I'm remembering now as a child, when you were given a camera, it was like, because there would be shots of fingers and, you know, random floor. And whereas now, that's just delete, 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 delete.
Exactly.
Whereas today, it's like, well, that captured that moment that you first learnt what a camera did.
Exactly. You those little moments count for everything, because really, in 20 years' time, those little moments become more important, because time. Photography is time. We're in this room, in the red room, cooking time, putting it on paper, putting it in the developer. And also, when we keep those pictures on our fridge, on our fridges with the magnets, over the course of time, they stay there.
Okay, so, but come on, digital means we can take thousands, that we can keep thousands, we can have, you know, photo frames that change photo every 20 seconds. So really...
Yeah,
swimming against the tide, is that?
You could argue I'm swimming against the tide, but I've yet to see a hard drive that's 5 years old that still works. Show me one. Every 3 years, you're going to have to migrate all that information. Yes, you're going to have a cloud, but recently I bumped into a friend of mine who took a lot of pride in telling me, "Eddie, when I die, I'm giving my kids my Spotify password and account." And I was like, "That's really sweet. When I die, I'm giving my kids 50,000 records.
Talk me through what is in this red and dark room, because actually now it seems quite light. I've adjusted to it.
Yeah.
But we've got all the trays, and for those that don't know the process,
yes.
You don't just get the film out and get a picture.
In this particular red and dark room, we have a participant who was with us last night who is making his final print. And with that, he's in front of an enlarger we've just put together this morning. We've got four enlargers in this room that came from the University of Exeter last week, Monday, which we bought off them because they were throwing it out for obvious reasons. This is a redundant technology, but little do they know. Right, and here we have a radio, because the most important thing you need in a dark room is the radio, because if you're going to work in the dark, you've got to listen to music. And then developer, stop, fix, and water. And then a drawing.
Say that again, because that's just taking me back.
It is.
Developer.
Developer, stop, fix, and water.
And one of the trays is red.
That's the stop tray.
Why is the stop tray a different colour?
It's just to help people distinguish that to the right is developer and to the left is water, so you know your order, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
And you watch it, and at a certain point when that's the image you want, you've got to stop the process.
Exactly. Exactly, and it is that you've gone out onto the street. You've captured something random. You've actually become attached to it for whatever reason. It's become now a memory that you cherish, and you want to make sure that memory is sort of reproduced in a way that you think reflects almost your personality. And it's a sort of something that at least be said about the enlargers we have in this room. Each enlarger is from a different part of the world, and it all carries an accent from that part of the world. So. The LPL enlargers from Japan, uber precise. The De Vere 203 is a British enlarger. I mean, look at the construction and the engineering on that. The Durst is Italian. It's very fanciful. And the Czechoslovakian enlarger, which is... And these were sort of the great stalwarts of photography in Europe. And I think it's a beautiful thing that they all come together as one sort of trans-Euro darkroom.
Now, this is... We could speak for hours on this. I'm loving it. But let's cut to the chase. Those people who are interested, what can they... I think the workshops are all basically full now,
The workshops are now full. And what we'd like people to do is just to come by on the weekend and have a look at what the workshops captured.
So remind us, where are we again? Because we're right near the Dome, aren't we?
We are right near the Dome, right opposite the Dome, in fact, at 114 Church Street. And we're just a small little pop-up gallery... Managed to sort of build a small darkroom in the basement and build a gallery upstairs, or what will become our workshops become a gallery by the end of the week. And it's just a chance to sort of see what photographic seeing can give you, you know, making tangible prints and sticking them on a wall. And by the end of it all, I think we're just going to mothball everything. If anyone needs any developing tanks or anything else, well, you can pretty much have what we don't use.
I'm standing here quite inspired, so I might seek you out on another occasion.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've still got 10 or 20 rolls of films. I'm more than happy for people if they have their own cameras and, you know, they just maybe sort of feel like, oh, no, I'd like to give it a go. Then, yeah, come by. I'll give you a roll of film and, you know, there's a tank and you can watch a YouTube video and figure it out. But we're all here to help. Everyone's sort of interested in photography, and as that day goes on, more people from Brighton come in and start contributing, and, you know, we start to help each other out in terms of printing and, you know, just producing ideas on paper.
Thank you so much for your time and your inspiration.
Thank you.
I'm going to leave you in peace now, because you've got other people arriving for the next
wave
session.
Come in.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seriously, Eddie Ochere there talking to me, and he probably could have had to push me out of that darkroom had there not been another group booked in. It wasn't the smell of the chemicals, it was the memories coming back of lovely days developing the old black and white pics.
Are you sure? Because I thought you were a bit weird when you arrived at the studio tonight. I figured it must have been the chemicals. That's a great story. I mean, it's nice to hear someone who's an analogue geek as well. He loves his records too, obviously.
So passionate. And his keenness to share that passion with people and to say, look, let's give this a go. And there were people when I arrived there who were putting their photos and selecting their photos from the workshop that had just happened this afternoon. And clearly, and then, you know, looking at the negatives, holding them up to the light and picking which shot. And it just, things take time, and beautiful things sometimes take time. And that was, it suddenly remembered that joy of photography, not being snap, 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 snap. Oh, that one's no good, that one's, I'll have that one. It's a creative process. It was great.
Sounds terrific, actually, and he's inspired me because I love analogue photography. Once I went and took some photos around Brighton with some expired colour film, and then I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll stick it in the laundrette. So I stuck it in a plastic bag, took it down to the laundrette, put it in with my washing, and I went down to Jessop's, and we had two Jessop's in Brighton, and I said, oh, I just stuck that through the laundrette. They said, we're not going to develop that. You might break our machines. So I kind of went away with my tail between my legs, and I went off to the other Jessop's in town and just stuck it in. I didn't break their machines. Not surprising. And they went bust, is it? So anyway, analogue photography sums up to that. So where can we see Eddie? And also, it's all taking place this weekend. So the workshops at the moment, all sold out. So, but you can see the results of the workshops. I'm rummaging through the festival programme now.
It's at the Bright Room in the gallery it's a small pop-up gallery at 114 Church Street. It's that one just opposite the entrance to the Dome changes... exhibitions on a regular basis there and has some interesting stuff going on. So that's there at 114 Church Street, opposite the Dome. And yeah, pop in and see the black and white photos. And like me, maybe get inspired and think, I've still got that old camera. Can you still buy film? Yes, you can. Let's do it.
Hey, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. for that one. Time for some more Brighton music now. We are celebrating, obviously, the Brighton Festival here on Radio Reverb. But also, every single track we're playing, apart from the ones in the festival, are Brighton acts. This is Bevan featuring Takesha. More great music from Brighton. That is Bevan featuring Takesha, What Am I To Do, on Radio Reverb. This is the Brighton Festival show. And now, sadly, we're coming towards the end of the Brighton Festival, but we've still got lots and lots of goodies still to come. And here's one I'm really looking forward to. Choreographer Theo Klinkard premieres his dance piece With a Difference, This Bright Field, at the Dome in the Brighton Festival on Thursday. So tomorrow, if you're listening to the live show, tonight, if you're listening to the 8 a.m. repeat. I say it's With a Difference because it's divided into two very different parts. In the first part, the audience joins the performers on stage. Theo came to Radio Reverb to tell us how it was devised.
The life of this piece started about 4 years ago when an organisation in Nottingham, Dance 4, charged me with making a dance piece for the larger dance stage. And I was trying to think about how I could do it differently. And the last piece that I'd made was very much an intimate work for an audience of 60. So I got really into this proximate audience and being able to play with detail and tone and texture and kinds of performance. And I was just trying to see how I could work that into something which was going to be end on, seen from the auditorium. So the idea is that in the first part, the audience are on stage and they get to be literally as close as we are right now with the performers and kind of get to know them. So there's a kind of familiarity which is created so that in the second part, you might look at this group from a distance through the lens of the individual.
That sounds a little bit daunting to me, to be an audience member doing that. I'm sure as a performer, it's not, it's just kind of natural. But
I think the performers might be a bit more daunted by the thought of people like you walking up and staring at them, Melita.
Thank you.
Well, we're doing our very best to make that first part really warm. So all the decisions about the sound and the invite, if you like, there's also soft cushions now, so you should feel very welcome. So it kind of builds an inviting space for the audience.
You've talked about the piece examining the objective and the subjective gaze. This positions the audience in a very different way to what we're accustomed to. And how do you want to sort of break that apart and that whole idea of, you know, the audience just as the passive onlooker?
I think there's something about, if I think about reviews of performance, I think often you get this kind of like written in absolutes, like the work was this, it was that. And I think what's often not highlighted or framed enough is that that's a particular subjective viewpoint. So I think I keep trying to make work now where I'm really highlighting that. So no audience member is going to have the same experience of the first part. The dancers have a series of stage flats, so they are carving and editing your experience. So literally there might be a kind of private dance. It's almost just performed for you. It's not daunting and it's not sexual. just say, you private dancer.
You'll have disappointed some people there.
So they are kind of editing and they have agency, if you like. So they have this kind of license to make decisions. It's improvised, the first part. So they're very much conducting it. It's seemingly not got an author, this first part. And the second part is very much me very clearly making kind of social or choreographic conditions on the groups. You're seeing them working under or within conditions. And I think there's a kind of level of gentle political commentary going on there.
I'm wondering then if this is kind of, you're interpreting it in your own way because you'll see it differently as an audience member. Is this meant to be an uplifting experience, a challenge? I mean, is it fun? Is it not fun?
It's funny. I normally make...
I need a box to put this
in. I know.
The fun box.
I'm normally absolute fun box person. And the last piece I made, which was actually at the concert hall in the Dome, was for a Cuban company, Danza Contemporánea de Cuba. And it was absolutely a celebration by the end. And then through this last year, I've been kind of like, this is not a time necessarily for catharsis. It's a time of coming together, mobilizing, empowerment. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I need to challenge this idea that dance work needs to end with resolve and resolution. Mm-hmm. So for this one, I've really been kind of going, without it being aggressive, what is it to kind of unite, come together with all of that difference, with all of that kind of personal independent viewpoint for the audience and the performers inside of it? What is it like to come together with that diversity and to have a kind of mobilized call to arms, if you like? And it's funny that this last week I've spent the whole time on social media getting young people to vote, and I suddenly made this connection with my work. I was like, oh my God, it's kind of somehow related to this kind of will or wish to mobilize at the moment.
It's also an interesting concept in terms of when you watch a dance piece, normally you're looking at the dance piece as a whole. You will pick out individual performers, but you'll see the piece as a whole. And I guess with this one, people will be looking at their, if you like, their own dancer that they worked with predominantly.
Absolutely. And I think that there is... Well, there's many ways to make work, but what doesn't interest me is putting myself at the center of the piece and thinking of, I always use this analogy of an onion. So I don't think of the dancers as layers of myself and versions of me. I'm trying to tap into what makes them move and what makes them different. The idea being that that's going to create more connections with different kinds of audience members, with who they relate to, even just on an energetic level. Do you know what I mean? So... yeah, more connections between performers and audience. And I just stand outside and I think of myself like a host, if you like.
I've been looking at the videos for this and it looks absolutely visually stunning. I mean, the costumes and the sound appear to be as much stars of the show as the performers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that I don't necessarily make theatrical work, but I really enjoy playing with these different elements. And I'm not a trained designer, but I have been working for 15 years in opera and theatre and live art and dance as a designer. And then also I work with this great composer, James Keane, who is from Brighton.
He's,
Brighton's own. And he's actually got his 14-year-old son, who's a Dorothy Stringer student, Archie Keane. Big shout out to Archie Keane. So Archie is singing this beautiful, it's a little bit like Sigur Rós or Jonsi,
wow,
you know, this kind of very delicate sound.
Love that.
She's a massive fan of Jonsi.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got that kind of tone, kind of something very delicate, which, I don't know, taps into some emotional landscape.
Dance is still a medium that people do shy away from, and you know, this is a theme that I've kind of referred to, you know, as too difficult. I mean, for me personally, I got into dance in the 80s with people like Extemporary Dance and Lloyd Newsom, Nigel Charnock, who actually explored queer culture through dance. And they used a lot of music from bands like Wire, so kind of like your sort of punk rock ethos. And then, of course, Michael Clark came through and later and became the enfant terrible of contemporary dance. Are you inspired by people like that in your work?
I actually teach Michael Clark Company and I teach DV8 as well, Lloyd Newsom's company.
Oh, right.
So I have quite a lot of contact over the last few years with those companies. I think what's important is that the work that is made is reflective of its time. And I think it's interesting you point out those people because they were working through the 80s when there was a lot of dissent and a lot
and
of confusion.
And response to AIDS in their work as well.
Absolutely, really direct. And I think that, I mean, I choose to make, well, I guess Michael makes movement-led work. I also kind of deal with the body in motion rather than creating a theatrical narrative. But I do want to be looking, increasingly I'm looking politically at how, you know, what information there is even in the simplest thing. You know that there's already political information with how someone enters the stage, what the music doing, are they doing the same action at the same point? There's kind of gentle politics. So I guess I'm not making a kind of absolute comment, but I'm aware that the decisions that I do make already have political information in them. So I'm kind of getting wiser to that by the day.
So you are based in Brighton, hurrah. Does that feed into your work at all?
I'm in Peacehaven.
Peacehaven feed into your work at all?
Not a question very often.
I know. I live somewhere which just really lets me kind of totally drop down and chill out, actually, because I'm often working and travelling around different countries, mostly around Europe. So the place that I choose to live is really about kind of stopping. But actually, I do live... like right on the cliff edge. And the last piece I made was a duet with James, the composer, about the chalk cliff where I live. So that was a lot more, the landscape is really affecting me then. And this work is a little bit different, I suppose.
I guess that was a yes, wasn't it?
well done.
You've been named as an associate artist at Brighton Dome and Brighton Festival. Wow. I haven't got a clue what that means, but I guess you have.
I think it's a strong and stable position.
Hey! Oh, no.
I had to try and get it in somehow. Yeah, so I think it's still to be kind of worked out. It's a very new relationship and it's kind of being launched with this performance. So over the next few years, as they develop the building, I guess I'll be invited in to kind of take part in those conversations about how that can be developed. And also they would be helping me develop my new work. So I don't quite know what's next after this work. It's all been so intense getting this ready, but I'm so delighted to have this relationship with a venue where they can actually support you with technical time, and they're a really nice team. I love them.
That's Theo Klinkard, and he's talking about This Bright Field, which is the world premiere taking place at Brighton Dome Thursday. And apparently the availability later on for that intimate one-to-one before the main performance is a bit limited. But you can get there before 6 p.m, so I would definitely book your ticket up. But you're not going to get in past 6 p.m. for that one. And I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm looking forward as well to seeing what Theo comes up with in his position as whatever he is, an associate producer at Brighton Dome.
Yeah, sounds like he's got himself a nice gig. He's so jolly.
He's really jolly. He's
lots
adorable.
Of jolly people we've been talking to.
Everyone's
in this
been
program.
Jolly.
Jolly Brighton Festival folk. Now, you won't be too jolly if you miss out on tickets. Do you see what I did there?
Oh, yes.
See what I did there?
Segway.
Now, and you remember yesterday you were saying you must go and see Collisions. You must go and see Collisions.
Yes. Well, I said it several times.
I know. And then I spent 10 minutes literally yesterday clicking through trying to buy more than one ticket because I don't know if there's anything left now, because last night when I was very frustratingly going, oh my God, Melita told me to see this ages ago and I haven't booked and now I'm trying to and I can't get a ticket. I finally managed to get tickets for myself and a couple of friends on Sunday, but everything else, there was just like one ticket for the shows and lots of fully booked. And now I've just been checking other shows to see popularity. Now, one thing that I've been thinking, hey, great, the weather is fabulous for the outdoors Comedy of Errors the Brighton Open Air Theatre, which
I talked to them on the day I got knocked off my bicycle, actually. I've got my plaster cast taken off today, the Fact Fans. So yes, we featured them earlier on in our run.
Yeah, Fact Fans, anyone who likes seeing Melita's fingers, they are all 10 of them are now visible to the outside world.
To the naked eye.
Fully visible. Slightly sort of funny coloured still and a little bit, you know, uneven. But anyway, focus on things.
You're saying I'm wonky.
Birds. Let's think about that.
The birds.
If you hadn't been put off by Melita whispering her sort of Attenborough-esque kind of crawling around the woods and finding it all a bit freaky, then the birds. I'm going up to For the Birds at the Secret Woodland location tonight and really looking forward to
You'll
that.
You'll love it. Everyone's loved it.
Which is why everyone's been telling everyone, and it is almost fully booked. And I just checked and there are literally the only tickets. And if you've been thinking, oh, I'll just leave it to the last minute, see what the weather's doing. Do I want to go for a walk? Saturday and Sunday seem to be the only slots where there is still availability, and that's the late night slots. That's the sort of 11:20, 11:40.
Go late, yeah.
But there's only two slots on both of those nights of all the slots, so for the birds, not a lot. I was saying about Comedy of Errors, it seems that the evening shows are really selling well, but there is availability Friday lunchtime and Thursday evening. But if you're thinking about Comedy of Errors and like a bit of Shakespeare outside in the sunny, lovely.
Take a
warm
picnic.
Yeah, then do get in there and get that booked. What else are you looking forward to in there coming up? There's lots still, isn't there?
Well, I'll tell you what I can't go to because I'm otherwise occupied, is Mickey Blanco, who's going to be at the Spire. I have seen Mickey Blanco perform before. Absolutely stunning performer. This is going to be incredible. And I think in the setting of the church at the Spire, that's going to be an absolutely phenomenal gig. I don't suppose you spotted if there any availability on that one.
There is, actually. Yeah, I believe there is still availability. I think if I was looking at the right thing. I'm just trying to flick through
I'm flicking. I'm one-handed flicking as we speak.
Do you know what the thing is? There's no point us saying about availability and otherwise, because tickets do get returned to the box office. Things do happen. We've said this already at the repeating ourselves.
And just looking as well at that, because Mickey Blanco is going to be doing the Wraparound, which is a freestyling and rhyme writing workshop with Disraeli, helping you unleash your inner MC, which is taking place on Saturday at 4 p.m. at the Marlborough, which is a fiver. I imagine that's going to be quite popular, that one.
Yeah, and do you know what? Something I'm looking forward to that is coming up, that I'm going to be speaking to the performer of this one for Friday's show, is 100 Homes, and that is being performed at the Bevy Community Pub.
I'm a shareholder.
So does that mean that we have to declare sort of fiduciary
interest
in the show doing well?
maybe it does, I don't know. Well, I'd like it to do well anyway, because hats off to the Bevy, which is the UK's very first community-owned pub on a council estate. And I think, to me, this is part of Kate Tempest's plan to take things further outside of Brighton Centre.
Yeah, and it looks, I mean, it does look really interesting. It's a Belgian theatre maker, Yinka Kuitenbrouwer, who is...
Well done.
Thank you. I may have pronounced that completely incorrectly, but speed is of the essence with such attempts at foreign pronunciations, I find. I can't do English properly. I'm about to stumble over my words here. But here she's visited 100 people to find out their stories about what home is and is recounting these stories in this show. And that's on at the Bevy from Friday till Sunday at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. But as I said, we'll be hearing from Yinka about that on Friday's show.
Terrific. Well, we can squeeze in a couple more before the close of the show. Let's have a little bit more Brighton music. This is Brighton's Hayley Ross and Barracuda. Brighton's Hayley Ross and Barracuda. Don't forget, you can catch up with this show on the podcast. If you go to Audio Boom and you search for Radio Reverb Brighton Festival Show, you can catch a bite-sized podcast and complete shows as well.
And you have been listening to the very, very fertile darkroom that was the Brighton Festival special show. Fertile darkroom of a show this evening. The Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett and myself, Rebecca Sandals, on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, DAB and online, daily during the festival, 5 to 6pm, and we repeat at 10pm and 8am.
I'm very kindly supported by the Brighton Festival. Thank you to all our guests and, of course, to you for your lovely company. We are back tomorrow. The Furrow Collective played earlier in the festival at the Dome. This track is taken from their live performance on Monday the 15th of May. From us, bye.
Thanks very much.